Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview. Great. So do you want to introduce yourself and give us a sense of your expertise when it comes to touch?
Sure. I'm Corey Floyd. I'm a professor of communication at the University of Arizona. And for the bulk of my career, really, I've studied the communication of affection in close relationships. And so that often involves various forms of touch behavior, holding hands, kissing, hugging, things of that variety.
Amazing. So, you know, as we've come to kind of really think a lot more about touch during the pandemic, this must have been something that you've been thinking, oh, my research really already taps into this.
Well, I think so, because so many people during this time have felt really touch deprived. On one hand, it's really fortuitous that we went through the pandemic when we did, because we have things like Skype and Zoom and even cell phones that allow us to replicate a lot of the communication that we would typically have in our relationships. But the one thing that those technologies has not been able to replicate for us is a sense of touch. And so many people during this time, even though they've been able to talk to their loved ones and hear from them and see their faces, see their facial expressions, etc., we haven't been able to put our arms around the people we care about. We haven't been able to hold their hand or touch them or comfort them in those ways. And I think early in the pandemic, many people were feeling a real sense of dis-ease that things just weren't quite right in their relationships and their daily lives and the way that they were going about living. And some of them had a really tough time sort of putting their finger on what it was that was problematic or what it was that was missing. And then I think as we got a little bit further into the pandemic, many people realized, you know, I just really miss being touched. I really miss hugging my grandchildren, for instance, or being able to put my arm around somebody who needs comforting, or just being able to shake hands with somebody. Something as small as that can feel much larger when it's suddenly taken away from us.
And I mean, I would consider myself someone that isn't very kind of touchy-feely, but even I have noticed that, you know, I really miss that the ease of being able to kind of touch people, I suppose, like, as in, you know, it's probably a good thing now we kind of have all these, we have to ask for consent really explicitly, and that's a good thing about hugging, but it also makes it's not as kind of organic, I suppose. And maybe we were all kind of going about our lives before the pandemic doing a lot more incidental touching than we realized, perhaps.
It's entirely possible. You know, people really span the spectrum in terms of how comfortable they are with touch. To begin with, you describe yourself as not particularly touchy-feely. I would be way on the other end of the continuum in that. And so, I mean, everybody can locate themselves somewhere along that line in terms of the ease with which they go about touching others and how much they can consider it to be important in their lives. And I think you're absolutely right that this pandemic and our experiences coming out of seclusion have changed some of the way that we go about interacting with others. Perhaps it's made it a little bit less organic, maybe a little bit more regulated. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does change the way that we go about interacting with each other and finding ourselves in each other's space, asking permission, for instance, to hug or even to shake hands, has been common, at least in the area of the country where I live. So it's reorienting ourselves a little bit. But I think what's really interesting about that is that even though we have to go through some of that ritual now, are we shaking hands? Is it okay if I hug you? We're doing that because those kinds of behaviors matter to us. We're willing to go through the formality of it in order to have that hug or in order to have that handshake, because those behaviors are important to us. They matter to our quality of life.
And something we didn't necessarily think of directly before, because we just took it for granted, I suppose.
I think for many people, that's true. Like you said, it was just very organic part of the normal way that we interact with others. And if nothing else, this pandemic has changed a lot of what we consider to be normal, including in a number of ways with social interaction.
Now, you mentioned before that a lot of people kind of came to realize that they were really missing something. And the term that I've heard around this is touch deprivation or skin hunger. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of tell us what that means, like what it feels like? Can it get really serious?
It absolutely can. You know, skin hunger is sort of the popular term, and touch deprivation would be a more academic term, but they really mean exactly the same thing, which is an individual's experience of not receiving or sharing the amount of touch, the frequency of touch, and the type of touch that they feel that they want or need in their lives. And that's where that individual difference becomes really important. You may not need as much touch in your life as I do to feel normal, to feel cared for, to feel taken care of. So we each have our own set point in that way, but touch deprivation means that set point isn't being satisfied for one reason or maybe even for a variety of reasons. And so I think early on, it can lead to this sense of disequilibrium for us. We understand that something feels not quite right. Something feels off. We may not be able to put our finger on it or identify it. But then we come to realize, you know, I really just miss interacting with other people in ways that are casual and physical and that involve that kind of tactile contact. And the longer we're without that, and especially if we feel like we need it, if we have a higher need than average for touch, the more it can really resemble the symptoms of loneliness. And loneliness, I think, is one of those experiences that if you haven't gone through it yourself, it can be difficult to understand why it's such a big deal, why it's so problematic. But for people who are going through loneliness, including certainly many, many people during this pandemic time, it's a really difficult experience to bear. And it, in its more intense forms, it can be associated with a number of really bad experiences, a number of really problematic situations for people as they attempt to cope with their sense of social disconnection. Many of us turn to coping mechanisms that are quite maladaptive, things that, although they might make us feel a little bit better in the short term, actually end up introducing new problems to us. And touch deprivation can be something that causes some of those same types of maladaptive coping mechanisms. One example of that with respect to touch would be people who engage in illicit sexual activity. So finding somebody, a stranger, let's say online, meeting up for a sexual encounter, in the short term, it helps them because they have a sense of social connection. They have an experience of touch. They feel like they're getting what it is that they've been deprived of. But of course, that can introduce any number of new problems, both mental problems, exposure to disease, as well as relationship problems. It can introduce a number of new issues that are problematic. And that's why we would call that kind of a coping mechanism maladaptive.
And I suppose that becomes really difficult during the pandemic and, you know, not really being able to meet up with people at all. But I'm wondering, is there also, like, aside from kind of psychological issues, like, are there health issues associated with this, like physical health, I should say? Because it really reminds me of things I've read about, you know, with babies, if they're not kind of touched enough, they have failure to thrive and grow. Or the fact that, you know, medical doctors learn to do a kind of laying on of hands as part of their treatment, like touch is kind of got this physical health aspect as well.
I think there are a number of ways in which touch deprivation can be difficult for us physically. You know, touch is one of those things that helps our bodies to self-regulate. So when we feel touch, especially if it's comforting or warm, that helps our bodies either generate or maintain a sense of calm, a sense of stress relief, even a sense of pain relief. That keeps our bodies regulated. It keeps them from becoming dysregulated in response to stressful situations. So one of the times, when touch is really important and the lack of touch can be very problematic is when we are in distress. So think about a crying child, for instance, or an adult who is in hysterics over something that is causing enormous distress. Touch is one of the most effective and most efficient ways of helping that person to create a sense of calm, to self-regulate, to come back into equilibrium or a state in which their stress reaction is regulated, is manageable, rather than sort of taking over their experience. You also mentioned infants and infant development, which is a time in our lives when touch is extremely important. And we know from many very tragic situations that infants who are not regularly touched, they don't develop as quickly, they don't develop as fully, their immune systems are compromised as they grow. They literally don't grow as tall as they normally would because their bodies are, in a sense, redirecting energies that ought to go toward their normal development, all because they are deprived of that stress-regulating, emotion-regulating benefit of touch at a time when it's really quite necessary.
Wow. I mean, I feel like when you put all of this together and thinking about the importance of touch, it sounds like it's kind of a public health crisis, you know, aspect on top of the pandemic, if we can't kind of touch each other. I mean, how should we be dealing with this in times when touch is actually dangerous for virus transmission?
Right. And I think you make a really good point there that for all of its benefits, touch can also be very problematic in and of itself. So there are kinds of touch and situations in which touch can be, instead of stress alleviating, actually stress inducing for people. And of course, it can be very unhealthy when it comes to something like a communicable disease, which is a situation we all have been through in our recent history. Whether touch deprivation would actually qualify as a sort of an epidemic in and of itself, that may be a bit of an exaggeration, but to the extent that it's tied to something like loneliness, I don't think it's an exaggeration at all. So I think that loneliness in a broader sense than just the experience of touch can be at such epidemic levels that we really ought to be paying much more systemic attention to it. And of course, part and parcel of that attention is giving people opportunities for touch that is safe. That may be with loved ones, that may right now be with people who we know are vaccinated or we know are healthy, so we know that it's safe to be around them. And we know that the type of touch that we're engaged with them in is also safe and not not stress inducing for us. So to the extent that we create opportunities like that within our bubbles, we really are doing ourselves a favor. It's not necessary that we have wide ranging touch over a large number of people. It's actually much more beneficial that we have touch with people that we trust and with people that we care about. And to the extent that we can create bubbles of that opportunity in our own lives, then we're really helping ourselves not to overreact to that deprivation.
Well, what would you say to someone who might be listening to this who says, oh, I just realized, you know, this horrible feeling I've been having is actually this skin hunger feeling. What would you suggest they do? Like, go and ask their bubble partner for a long hug? I mean, what's the best treatment for this?
Well, I mean, that's certainly ideal. If you have people in your life that you feel close to, that you feel safe with, and that you feel comfortable touching and receiving touch from, then that's probably the best of all possible solutions during this time. But it's not the only one. There are some other things that people can do when that kind of touch is not really available to them. One piece of advice I've been giving a lot in the last year is trying to avail yourselves of opportunities to be around pets, to be around animals. And in particular, mammals, a dog, a cat, a horse. If you have opportunity to be around pets, a lot of the interaction and affection that we have with pets has many of the same stress regulating and stress alleviating effects on our bodies as interpersonal touch. There's a certain extent to which our own bodies and our own minds don't really know the difference between hugging another person and let's say hugging a really affectionate dog. And so if we can share that kind of interaction, we get the touch, we get the warmth, we have the positive affect that goes with that. I think it can be easy to overlook the benefits of interacting with animals in that way, but that's a wonderful substitute for the kind of interpersonal touch that many of us may be lacking during this time. Another thing that people can do that may strike some people as sounding a little bit silly, but would be to hug a pillow or a blanket or something else that is that's soft, that feels good against the skin. That also can provide some of the warmth, some of the softness, some of the pressure of an interpersonal hug or an interpersonal touch. You don't necessarily have the same affective experience, but often hugging or touching something that sort of stands in for another person, like, you know, the very idea of a security blanket that many of us had as a child, that's the idea of that security of that object. It's an imperfect substitute for being able to hug an actual human being, but it is something that can be useful. And then I think the final thing that people can do is not rule out the benefit of things like self-massage, massaging your neck or massaging your shoulders, or I sometimes will massage my hands, for instance, when I'm feeling particularly stressed. And again, to some extent, your body doesn't really know the difference between you massaging your shoulders and somebody else doing that. So the benefits can still accrue. It's still an imperfect substitute, but it is a substitute nonetheless.
And it really sounds like with those examples that you are getting benefit from doing the touching, not just being touched.
You know, it's really interesting. When I started studying affection, I thought a lot about that very question. We knew a fair amount at the time about the benefits of giving and receiving affection, but most of them were really focused on the benefits of receiving it. And I started wondering whether there was some benefit in actually providing it, in actually being the toucher rather than the touchee. And what we've come to learn in about the last 15 or 20 years is that not only is there benefit in providing that kind of affection or that kind of touch, but with some health outcomes, the benefit is actually greater for the provider than it is for the recipient. So in the case of something like a self-massage, if you're massaging your own neck or you're massaging your own shoulders, you're really getting both benefits, right? You're the toucher and the touchy. But it's a nice observation, and it's something that I often tell people with respect to affection, is that you don't have to wait for somebody else to provide it in order to benefit from it. In fact, you can be much more proactive, and I tell people when they're feeling distressed, one of the most effective things that you can do is find someone you care about and express affection to them rather than waiting to be the recipient of it. You will benefit just as much, if not more, by being the proactive provider of that touch.
Wow. It's so much to think about, and I feel like I need to kind of reconsider my own relation to touch here a little bit. We've talked a lot about how the pandemic times have really changed and challenged our relationship to touch. But what do you think about going forward? Like, what is the future of touch going to be in a kind of post-pandemic world?
It's such an interesting question, and one that so many of us in the social sciences have been pondering. You know, I've heard media reports during this pandemic that behaviors like hugging and even shaking hands are simply going to fall by the wayside, that coming out of this pandemic, we will never really return to those sorts of behaviors. And I don't actually think that's true. And the reason I don't think it's true is actually twofold. Number one, we've been through pandemics before, and we still hug, and we still shake hands, and we still put our arms around people. Pandemics, health scares in the past have not eradicated these behaviors from our social repertoires. I have no reason to think that they will this time. But the other more important reason that I don't think those kinds of behaviors are going to go away in social interaction is because they're so important to us. Like we were talking about earlier in this conversation, we're putting so much effort now into negotiating what are the rules, what are the expectations, getting consent, all of that now, so that we can shake hands, so that we can hug other people. We put that effort in because those behaviors matter to us, because touch matters in our lives. And I do think coming out of this pandemic, I made this prediction about a year ago, that we would go through this period when we were a little more leery, a little more careful, a little more about getting consent and making sure that it's okay, making sure people are comfortable, maybe not being quite as effusive with our touch. But I do believe that's a phase rather than a new normal. In other words, I think we will emerge from that as well and find ourselves back in a space when touch is just organic, it's just comfortable, it's easy, it feels like it did 2 years ago. I could very well be wrong about that, but that is my prediction. And I think that both history and just understanding the value and the importance of touch bear that prediction out.
Mm. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens and how we all adapt, possibly very quickly after everyone's vaccinated. But I think that's all of my questions. Is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't covered about touch and the pandemic?
I actually would just offer one observation, and actually it's about a comment that you made sort of in passing, that maybe you should rethink your own level of comfort with touch. I think it's really important that people understand what their own level of comfort is, and honor that and respect that. We have found that when people engage in touch that is comfortable for them, that's when they reap the benefits of it. It's not that you need to achieve a certain level or frequency of touch before you benefit from it, because your set point or the amount of touch that you need to benefit from it is very different than the amount that I would need. And that's okay. That's the point. It's if you were out trying to generate more touch than you were actually comfortable with, the effects on that would actually be detrimental to you rather than beneficial, even though that same amount of touch might be beneficial to me. So I guess I would just end with the observation that wherever you are on that spectrum, wherever you are on that continuum, it's okay to be there. That's who you are. And that's where your comfort level is. And the most important thing is that you honor that for yourself and you honor that for your loved ones and work within that instead of saying, well, I just need to make sure I get as much touch as I possibly can, because there is a point at which the benefits of that are going to begin to wane and you'll reach a point of diminishing return.
Well, that's a fascinating and empowering spot, I guess, to end on, I think. So thank you so much for taking the time for chatting today.
You're so welcome.